Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the generous support of Meyer Bramley Insurance, serving Illinois, Missouri, and Kansas. Meyer Bramley Insurance can be reached online at mbi.agency or via phone at 844-890-2626. Catholic Conversations, where we talk about faith, family, and finance.
We are back, Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. This is Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley. We have a fantastic guest with us today. Layla Miller is here. We're going to have a conversation about her new book, which is called Made This Way, How to Prepare Kids to Face Today's Tough Moral Issues. I just got finished reading the book a couple days ago, and I'll have to say that I thought it was fantastic as a father of five fairly young kids, the oldest being 13, that I thought she did a fantastic job of really helping parents to understand how to have some of these tough conversations these days with their children. So, Layla, thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for writing this book.
Oh, hi, Jason. Well, I'm glad to be here with you, and you're welcome. I think it was probably something that was needed these days in these crazy times.
Yeah, things have definitely changed. You know, I've made the comment a few times about myself personally. You know, man, I'm glad that I grew up when I did. I can't imagine, you know, how teenagers and college-age kids or young adults deal with, you know, the social media and the different apps that are out there. I mean, it's just insane to me. You know, I thought high school, you know, had its challenges, and these days things are definitely different than they were, you know, even just probably 10 years ago.
Yeah, I don't think we'll find anyone, you know, any adult who wishes they had been raised in a time where there were social media outlets and Instagram and all that stuff. I think we're all relieved that we didn't have to deal with that. So everything that's happening in the culture, you know, it's already kind of nosediving as far as morality, but then to have it out there exponentially talked about and put in our faces constantly, and these kids are having to deal with all that on social media and getting swayed, and it's a lot worse now than I think any of us ever could have imagined.
Yeah, I think you're right, and again, to your point, how much more difficult it is for our kids and for us to be parents to them and try to understand some of those new situations, really, and different, you know, I mean, kids are kids are kids, but with technology and everything these days, it brings another dimension to trying to parent.
Yes, and I will say that as a parent myself, I've been a parent for 27 years. So my oldest is 27. My youngest is 8. We have 8 children. The first few kids that we raised were raised pre-internet and also pre-LGBT, pre-all this transgender stuff coming up now. Those were things that we didn't even have on our radar screen when we were raising maybe our first 3 or 4 kids. And so now, with the littler ones that are coming up, the landscape is completely different. Our parenting has to be different. Everything, we couldn't have imagined it would happen this quickly. And so, yeah, it's almost like the whole culture is completely different. And, you know, I feel like we've raised, my husband and I have raised 2 different kinds of generations of children. So all of this, we're just trying to keep up with it as parents. Parents are completely freaked out and afraid, and they have some reason to be if they don't have those tools to be able to address what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine that for the most part, your first couple kids, the biggest concern was teenagers having sex was probably the biggest concern for you in addressing those situations. And then after that, what you probably just moved on to drugs and alcohol. And I would assume there probably wasn't a lot of other morality issues that were huge and daunting as a parent to have to face.
Right. And not only that, but so advocated by the rest of the culture, even the adults. So when I was raising the first few kids, they could watch little kid shows on TV, for example. And it never would occur to us that there would be something immoral that would be pushed through these little shows, such as, I don't know, two mommies or, you know, some kind of gay agenda or transgender stuff, much less the little library that we, you know, would take them to, or going to little story times for children. All of those things now, even teachers, everyone is indoctrinating with values and ideas and concerns and things that were considered, you know, anathema to most all people, you know, even non-religious people a couple of decades ago. So we're in this uncharted territory where, you know, we don't know what to do as Catholics, because there is no backup anymore from the culture. There is no protection of innocence anymore for our little ones, even in the shows, even in the movies, even in the libraries, even in the schools. We're in trouble, it seems. So, yeah, it's been disconcerting how quickly it's happened, which, again, God made us for this time. We have to remember that, and we have to remember that He does give us the tools we need in order to raise up our children and form them to be ultimately saints. I mean, we can do this. This is something that we have within our grasp with God's grace. But it's a little trickier now, and we're really going to have to employ God's strategies here in kind of interfacing with the culture that despises who we are.
Yeah, absolutely. Can you give us a little background on the book? I think that it, even just the layout, I was impressed with the way that you guys decided to lay out the book. I think it really makes it easy, almost as a how-to manual for parents. If they're questioning one specific topic with a certain age group, they can go right to a section of the book to get some support.
Exactly. So we did that on purpose. I because I like things to be done very simply, because for me as a busy mom, I need to make sure that if I'm going to have a resource, it's very easy to use, it's very quick. I can't, you know, spend hours trying to decipher something complicated. So we thought, okay, it needs to be laid out very user-friendly way. So what we did was we took the 10 most difficult moral issues that are out there, and they happen to all deal with the topic of the use and misuse of human sexuality, and we put each one in a section. And so each one has its own section, and we begin each section, let's say, for example, transgender identity. You know, we'll have the first section in that, the first chapter in that section is what the church teaches. So then we've basically catechized the adults, because let's face it, you know, I was raised in the 70s and 80s. I was not well catechized. I think a lot of the fear out there among parents and even teachers and even priests is that we were not well catechized. So the first little chapter is what the church teaches in very simple ways. The second chapter in each section is how to speak to little kids on that topic. And then the third chapter in each section is how to speak to big kids, or in other words, teens, or people who are past puberty, how to speak to those older kids on that topic. So you can go straight to the subject, straight to the age group. First, catechize yourself, which is super important. And all of this is done under the umbrella of natural law teaching, which is something that is our patrimony as Catholics, but which we have completely kind of kicked out of the equation maybe 40, 50 years ago. So we're bringing it back. It's a really easy way to teach children. So that's how we set it up. And yeah, super user-friendly. You could read it straight through, or it could be more like a reference book.
Yeah, to your point, I was a convert about 10 years ago to the mm-hmm. church, and there was obviously a lot of topics that I knew from the media or whatever that the Catholic Church's stance on, you know, contraception or whatever, but mm-hmm. but not really a lot of the why. And a lot of those, you know, more intricate conversations weren't necessarily dealt with through RCIA. And so as I've mm-hmm. Continued to catechize myself or go to Bible studies or whatever, it always fascinates me the beauty with which the Catholic Church makes moral decisions. And I would definitely encourage, to your point, any, especially adults that say, well, I don't believe or I don't agree with the church on XYZ. If you haven't taken the time to educate yourself on why the church stands in some position of morality, I think a lot of adults would be shocked to probably understand the church a lot more and understand why she teaches what she teaches. And I think that in all the instances I've ever uncovered, there's a lot of beauty there when it comes to respect for the dignity of humanity. And so if you don't agree with the church on one particular issue, I definitely say take the time to educate yourself on why the church teaches what it does, and I think you'll have a lot more clarity in regards to her stance.
Oh, absolutely. And that's the thing. So the topics that we put in the book may not even seem related to some people. For example, you know, how does reproductive technologies such as IVF relate to pornography or modesty or you know, any number of these other things? And then you realize, okay, wait, it all is under the same umbrella of how God created us, how he created our bodies, how he created human sexuality, how he created male and female and marriage, even from the garden. So all of these things hang together. They're all connected, and one can't really be separated from the other. And that's the thing that we weren't ever taught, and we weren't catechized well, but it's also the very thing that we need to give to our kids, because this is a feelings-based culture. And so everything is just kind of, okay, well, how I feel should determine what I do. And yet kids also, we're all made to respond to truth, goodness, and beauty. So that truth, that idea that things make sense is very important, and yet we're not giving that to kids. And so we wonder, why are they so confused? You know, they're going on their feelings. They're just going whichever way the culture or the peer pressure is going. But if we can show them that the world makes sense, that there's truth in this, and that there's a reason that God designed us this way, and that all people, even people who don't believe in God, can see the design of things if they look with their eyes and their reason, that keeps kids Catholic ultimately, because they see that it makes sense and that things tend to flourish if we go in that direction and use things the way that the way that nature the way that God created it, which is using things according to their natures. So I have found once the world makes sense to a child, it's not that hard for them to stay the course, because they're made to respond to what makes sense and how everything is in right order. So we just have to be able to use that language and explain that to them in ways that we haven't for a very long time. But it is the antidote to what's going on out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I like the way that you broke down the kind of the prepubescent age children with the teenagers in regards to how to deal with a lot of these topics. You do bring up the point, and you had mentioned it a little bit earlier, that sometimes our young children are exposed to things either at school or through the media or whatever that they really shouldn't be exposed to, and definitely probably mm-hmm. would not have been exposed to in the past, to your point. And so then it makes it a little bit more challenging for parents, because we have to balance that difference between what we really should be explaining to someone that age, but then also having to get to the point where to your point there, that they understand what they have been exposed to in a way that they can truly understand it.
Mm-hmm. So yes, there's a document that we reference in the book that's an incredible Vatican document from the Pontifical Council for the Family. I think it was written in 1995. It's called The Truth and Meaning of Human Sexuality. And I always tell everybody, just go online, download it, print it out, get your highlighter, or go buy the booklet. I'm sure that's online too. But really, it gives you an idea of how we're supposed to approach these issues. But there's an overlying theme for the little ones, and that is protection of innocence. So there's something called the latency period, which is those years of innocence, as JP2 called them, from about the age of, you know, preschool through puberty, where we aren't to give them direct sexual information. They need to be able to be carefree and be children and not be sexualized in any way. And any teaching ideally would come indirectly through, oh, you know, mommy's having a baby, isn't it wonderful? And they'd see the interplay between mom and dad and how that's a beautiful thing to see a married couple, man and woman, and all these things. It's just more looking at the world around them and being very innocent about them. But now the culture is forcing our hand, of course, and they're putting these explicit things in front of our innocent children where they should not be exposed to this, but they are. And then it's a question of how do we address that? Still trying to keep their innocence, but then not wanting to over explain or give them more than what they've been exposed to, and then how to explain that. So we go into that a lot in the book as well, because, you know, number one rule is always don't freak out. Don't freak out. If your child has heard something you wish they had not heard, you don't want to react in a way that scares the child or makes them feel ashamed. So that's a big thing. You know, you have scared parents out there. They don't know what to do, and they do tend to overreact or get or even like ignore it or shrink away or So those problems are real, but we have to face them.
Yeah, I think some of the best advice that I got out of the book was probably one of the most practical things, and it really relates directly to this topic. When a young child comes and asks a question, and you said, before you say anything, seek to understand. It'll buy you time to try to formulate yes. the right answer. And to your point, and you made it in the book, you know, that they might have heard something and they might be asking about something, but they don't really understand what it is. And before we go too far in explaining something, we want to try to figure out where exactly they're at, and it buys us time to come up with the right answer as parents.
Absolutely. So you might say, honey, where did you hear that term? Or, you know, and then you'd get some more information
right.
by getting that answer. Or you might say, what do you think that means? And then kind of maybe get an idea of, you don't have to take it to a certain point with that child, because they really had a completely different thought about what that might mean, and you could just redirect. So there's ways to buy time and really start to understand what they're saying, so that you don't have to take it too far. Absolutely. That's so important. And you have to remember, too, that little children trust their parents. So don't be afraid, like, oh, no, if they heard something from a peer, or they heard something from TV or from a teacher, who am I to, you know, I can't come in now. And, oh, gosh, we need to have a lot more confidence in the fact that little children are made to trust their parents, and they will trust you and your answer. And so you have to be confident. I don't care if you fake it. I always tell people, be an actor if you have to. You could be dying inside, but you're going to show a peaceful countenance, and you're going to be able to meet their gaze and be very loving and open about listening to what they have to say, and then giving a response in good time if you've fished for some more information. But you can't, you know, look like a deer in the headlights. You have to be as confident as you should be as a parent whose child trusts you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, and look how easy it is for parents a lot of times. This is a family show, so I won't say specifically, but obviously mm-hmm. there's a couple stories that parents are very good at faking for young children for quite a while. And so just because
exactly.
it's a difficult conversation or one that we don't want to have doesn't necessarily mean that we shouldn't, you know, handle it in a similar way that we're already dealing with our children and their innocence as
mm-hmm.
well. And I know exactly. that you made the point in the book, too, that when we do have to have those conversations with children who are maybe overexposed, to your point, it's also good to reinforce to them that, you know, this is not a conversation then that they should go back and have with their friends at school and those types
exactly.
of things.
Exactly. And that teaches them kind of prudence and decorum and privacy, and it's okay. Again, we live in an age of social media where it occurred to me the other day that we never use terms anymore like mind your own business or don't air your dirty laundry in public. We don't do that anymore because everyone thinks they're supposed to talk about absolutely everything to everyone all the time. And so our kids aren't even realizing, and they need to know from us, you know what, certain topics and certain things, they need to be private. You know, we don't need to go and tell our friends about everything. We don't need to go and plaster this everywhere. We need to learn that we can keep some things private. We can keep some things to ourselves, and that has to do with matters of, you know, real delicacy. So, I mean, there's definitely a lot of readjustments that we need to do here in this particular culture that I don't think we're getting anymore. We're not really remembering that not everything needs to be spoken to everyone.
Yes, absolutely. Our filter of in secular society has gotten extremely thin.
Extremely, extremely. Yes.
We're having a great conversation with Layla Miller, the author of Made This Way, How to Prepare Kids to Face Today's Tough Moral Issues. You're listening to Catholic Spirit Radio and Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley. We're going to be back after a short break. And we'll get a little bit more in depth with Layla on the book. Again, thank you for being with us, And we'll be back right after this.
You're listening to Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 and 92.5.
Gift your friends and family with a Christmas trip. If you act quickly, you can purchase tickets for Catholic Spirit Radio's Christmas pilgrimage to the National Shrine of Our Lady of the Snows. The charter bus leaves in the late morning on Saturday, December 1st. There are pickups in Bloomington, Peoria, and Goodfield. The shrine grounds will be decorated with the Nativity as the centerpiece of the drive-through light display. There's a church tour, Christmas tree exhibit, and gift shop too. Don't wait. Purchase tickets today for this special Christmas event. CatholicSpiritRadio.com or 309-828-6554.
We are back. Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. This is Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley. If you're just tuning in, you missed a fantastic first part of the hour, so I would encourage you to go and check us out on either iTunes or Podbean and listen to the podcast. Or, as always, you can find us at CatholicSpiritRadio.com. We've been having a fantastic conversation with Layla Miller, the author, or co-author, I guess I should say, and we'll ask her about that here in just a little bit, of the book Made This Way, which really is a how-to manual and support for parents in dealing with conversations about, really about human dignity, I would say, is kind of the overarching theme, but different problems and situations that come up for our Catholic youth these days. So, Layla, again, thank you for being with us. Let's touch a little bit on the fact that this is a co-authored book. How did the basis of the book really come about?
So, it's a great question. I've known Trent Horn before he was a
before he was Trent Horn.
He was a young man, I think probably in college at that time, when he was a chaperone for my daughter at World Youth Day. He was one of the chaperones for their group that went to Sydney, Australia a few years ago. And so I knew him when I was already, you know, had pretty much grown, you know, at least one grown child.
Sure.
Almost, and then several others, and he was just a young guy. But then he went off and became this great apologist to Catholic Answers, and we kind of kept in touch loosely, and then I wrote a couple books before this one, and I was in the diocesan studio doing an interview, and he was coming just as I was leaving, and we asked each other, oh, what's your next project? And we, strangely enough, God is good, providentially, he had said, well, I'm thinking of doing this, and I said, oh, I was thinking of doing that. We kind of had this idea that we needed to do something as far as explaining to parents or helping parents or adults teach these moral issues to the kids today. And so that's how it started. So we met for lunch, and we decided, okay, well, this dovetails nicely because he has really good research experience, apologetic experience. He loves the footnoting and things like that. And I hate footnotes. Like, it's like, get footnotes away from me. I can't stand them. And and I have the experiential part of it where I've raised, now I guess I have 5 adults now out of the 8, and they've all kept the faith, and they've all been able to see that the faith makes sense, and it's kind of all worked. And so I thought, well, you know, this is what I've been doing on my blog for years. This is what he's been doing. We put it all together. It's in my voice because, you know, I'm the mom, kind of the one teaching how other dads and moms and maybe other adults would do this. Trent still has 2 little teeny tiny boys, so he hasn't done that experiential part of it yet. But so it's in my voice. It's very easy to read, and but both of our expertise, you know, came together just perfectly, and we were able to write it really 50-50. That's kind of crazy too, where we would, you know, someone would take a chapter and then we'd throw it to the other person to tweak it and throw it back, and we went back and forth for all these chapters, and it was really a divine collaboration, I'm going to say, because it worked out really well.
Yeah, it's amazing how those things always come together, right?
Yes, not without a few frustrations in between. I mean, you know, it was you never want to know how the sausage is made. You know, it was crazy, but it came out pretty nicely. We did have to leave a lot of stuff on the cutting room floor, as we said, because there's so much to each of these difficult moral topics. There's so much that you could say and want to say, but you just don't want to have a book that's too unwieldy or too long. People don't have time for that.
So. Yeah, I'm sure, or even just more topics.
Yes, yes, there could have been more topics, yes. And you know, with the culture we live in, you don't know what the next topic could be that we haven't even thought of yet.
Yeah,
you know, 5 years ago, we wouldn't have put transgender in there. So it's crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think it's interesting. And I know in checking you out online and looking up some of your past work, I wanted to make sure for our studio audience that you were 100% vetted as far as your expertise goes. You've written a few other books as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny because the first book I wrote was called Raising Chaste Catholic Men.
That's the one that triggered my eye, and I was like, ooh, I need to get that book.
Yeah, it's funny because it was a self-published book, again, because people started asking me, could you tell us how to raise good men in this culture? And I'm like, sure, okay, I think I have something to say on that. So I put this together. I self-published it. It actually got picked up by a publisher, so it's in a second edition now through Holy Heroes. And I definitely get the second edition because that's expanded now to get, again, transgender stuff. And Father Dwight Longenecker did a foreword, and Jason Everett, and I was like, oh, this is crazy, because it was just a self-published little nothing. So Raising Chaste Catholic Men was the first one. Then I did Primal Loss, the Now Adult Children of Divorce Speak, which was just not even on my radar. It was completely a fluke that it happened. Again, a self-published book that, again, strangely, and I still pinch myself, got endorsed by Cardinal Sarah, which is crazy.
I saw that.
For a self-published book.
Yeah.
Nobody. Who self-published book? And then he also endorsed this latest one, too, which is really nice. So I was still pinching myself. But yeah, so I've kind of fallen into books, which it wasn't ever, again, something I wanted or thought that I would ever do. I mean, it would have been a nice idea, but I'm like, well, whatever. I just blog occasionally. So I'm just kind of in awe of how this has come about. But I do think the fact that there's this void out there and that parents are so afraid, because that's what I hear constantly. It's what I heard when I was blogging. It's what I hear just in the community at my parish. People are just afraid of this culture. They don't know what's going to become of their children. And I just think there is something that we have to say that is not being said, which is, this isn't rocket science. You can do this. And even if something has gone wrong, and even if it's past the point where you think, uh-oh, I messed up, there's always something to be done, and there's always prayer, and there's always holiness that comes in. But don't despair. You know, don't be discouraged. That's always from the devil. So that's kind of what we wanted to let people know, is not only are there practical tools and practical ways to teach that we need to bring back as Catholics, but don't despair if things have gone a little bit south. We dedicate the whole book to St. Monica. So, you know, she knows how that goes when you think there's no hope.
Absolutely.
But there really is.
Well, yeah. And I think to your point about the void, you know, I think, and again, this probably in relationship to the raising of your first couple of kids, you know, if you had a parenting disagreement in regards to how you were going to parent your child versus maybe their friends at school, it was probably no big deal. And today, I think that the society that we live in, you know, so demonizes people through just pure hatred. That they don't agree with, or, you know, it, again, to your point about maybe even the transgender, you know, if you don't accept me the way that I am, then it's because, you know, you are flawed as a human being, and there's so much hatred and ridicule, and we have social media, and if you've never been on Twitter before, it's a very hate-filled space a lot of times, can get very mean very quickly. And so, to your point, I think there's a lot of parents that are like, "Geez, how do I raise my kids in our faith and what we believe in, you know, without being attacked, both having them attacked and having me attacked in the society that we're currently in?"
Oh, and that's a very interesting point that you said, without having them attacked or me attacked. Here we go. So I always say that the two virtues most missing in society today, or most needed, are chastity and courage. And I think that part of what is happening, one thing innately that human beings do not want is to be socially shamed. I mean, we adults recoil. Everyone recoils from being socially shamed. You don't want to be different from the group. Everybody, you know, piling on saying you're a bigot, you're a hater, you're evil, you know, you're the worst, you Catholics, you know, this and that. And if the parents do nothing else than model courage for their children. Because again, what else are we called to do by Christ other than to be set apart? You know, we're going to be different. We're going to be hated by the world. That was a promise. And we've been so comfortable in these past few, decades, but in America, we're very comfortable because it's been a Christian nation, you know, the morality is pretty much okay with us. And well, now that's changed, and we're the outliers. And the question is, are you willing to be an outlier in your neighborhood or, again, it's not about not being charitable. You can be charitable to everyone, but standing for what is true, are you willing to let your children see that, yeah, it's uncomfortable and that's okay? Sometimes we're called to be very uncomfortable. The cross is actually part of our sanctification and we're called to pick it up. So where they see you being courageous, they will be more likely to be courageous as well. I will say this. This is really interesting. You know, we worry about our teens being attacked, but we give them credit, too, for wanting to be heroes, for wanting to do the right thing and wanting to be, you know, social justice is all very big. Well, this is about justice, and this is about social society, meaning the family. That's the first cell of society. I just got a text yesterday from a friend who said, Layla, her daughter is in high school. My daughter picked up the book, and again, I always thought, oh, it's just for parents. I think it's also okay to give to your high schoolers. She picked up the book, she said, and she has not stopped reading it. She read it straight through, and she told her mom, this is exactly what's going on in my school, and this is exactly what I need. And so I thought, oh, that's part of what it is, too, is equipping the kids themselves, these teenagers, maybe to look through if they already have an open heart, you know, if they're not already off the rails, and then you might have to maybe not give the book to them directly. But the ones who are like, Mom, I want to defend my faith, I don't know how, give them the book if they're teenagers. And then they'll have the tools to go back and be confident and be okay with being the outlier if that's necessary. I will tell you that sometimes it's that, and my older kids go to a charter school, a public charter school, so they have kids of all belief systems, and they are able to do apologetics. They're able to do things where, like, kids that are not even religious will come up to my son and say, could you pray for me because my dad's going into surgery? Like,
wow.
But they know them as the kids who are confident and who are telling them things that might not be what the culture is saying, but it makes sense to these kids on some level. So we have to be confident that God's truth is transcendent, and it does reach all people who have even a slightly open heart.
Well, and I think that goes to your first chapter in the book, which speaks about the natural law.
Yes. It's for everyone in all times and all places. It's not like we're telling people you have to get to Mass or you have to believe in the Trinity. What we're saying is the moral law, such as you shall not kill, you know, you shall not steal, you shall not commit adultery, everybody understands through the light of human reason that there are certain ways that humans ought to act. It's why we all get upset when someone cuts us in line, whether we're in China or here. You know, we all know there's an injustice there. Wait a minute, that doesn't seem right. So the natural law is written on the hearts of every human being, and that is what we have to be confident about, is the moral law is for everyone, not just for some of us.
Yeah, absolutely. And I wanted to go back to your point about having courage in society to take a stand on truth and not just wanting to have everybody like you. You know, I think a lot of our struggle as lay Catholics comes from the fact that we don't always see that courage from our priests and bishops all the times when it comes to. You know, I think a lot of them make statements that say, "Well, I'd rather be liked than." You know, maybe necessarily take a chance at offending somebody who doesn't believe what the church believes.
Right, right. And we really, ultimately, the person we ultimately do not want to offend is God. So let that be the first person we don't want to offend, and then everything else will flow from there. Because of course we can speak in love and charity to everyone, but that again, it comes to. Are we really just trying to be charitable when we refuse to speak the truth or refuse to go along, you know, or if we decide to go along with everyone saying, oh, well, we just don't want to drive them away from Christ? Well, maybe, I'm just suggesting it might be more about a cowardice that we have rather than that we're just being charitable. So we really have to look into our hearts and say, am I just not wanting people to think I'm mean because I want to be liked? And that's huge with priests. Yes, that's absolutely huge with all of us. But yeah, we're seeing that in our clergy as well, which everybody just wants to be the good guy. And they say, oh, that'll bring people to Christ. I don't see that happening in the last 30, 40 years. I see people fleeing the church and not knowing their faith. And, you know, I don't find that we have now more and holier Catholics. I think we have the opposite, which is the Catholics are starting to look more and more like the world instead of Catholics bringing, you know, people from the world into, you know, to the heart of Christ. I just don't see it happening the way people say it's supposed to by being just, quote-unquote, charitable without any truth attached. So we have to really look at ourselves and say, maybe this is more cowardice than anything else.
Absolutely. Well, I think, and again, to your point about the book, children are probably the most pure reflection of society. And if we're going to try and raise our kids to believe the things that are right and truthful, we have to attach not only faith, but also the truth. And we can't just sugarcoat it. We can't just, we can't just make up stories for them. Otherwise, they won't understand it because it doesn't make sense because it's not the truth. They'll go out into the secular world to try to find answers. The answers that they find won't be Catholic. And by then, we've lost that youth for another generation.
Right. And, you know, once you put the pieces of the puzzle in place for them, hopefully starting as little kids, they will be able to use their reason and to use their observation to look around and see the truth that, gosh, if we don't use things according to its nature, according even, you know, human sexuality, for example, if you don't use that according to its nature, they can see in their peers, they can see where things fall apart. And so that's its own verification that this truth is timeless. It works. You have, you know, kids who are from, a lot of kids from divorced homes or shattered identities and stuff. And if we want to wonder, why are they going to, in droves now, it's like a fad, you know, to go to LGBT and to start transgendering or try, you know, gender fluidity or now I'm gay or that there's always a counterfeit ready for a kid, you know, who comes from a Catholic family and maybe had a shattering of their life or even the secular kids. They need a family. And I'm telling you, LGBT identity and that family, that is a family in the sense that they will accept everyone and love, even in a not healthy way, but they'll love and bring in anyone and say, you're one of us, you know, you can be with us. And so we have to be careful, because if we aren't giving them a foundation of truth that makes sense, they will go somewhere else to find a family and an identity. And that's what we're seeing everywhere. But your kids will be able to see that if you explain that to them, and suddenly a light bulb will go off. It makes sense. It makes sense, because this is human nature. We all want to belong, and we all want an identity, and we all want truth. It's just a matter of, are they going to get it from us, or are they going to get a counterfeit from the culture, which will take them down, you know, into darkness, unfortunately. And that's what the enemy wants. He wants to snare them that way. So we got to fortify ourselves and do this right.
Absolutely. If you're just tuning in, again, we're having a fantastic conversation with Layla Miller, the author of Made This Way, a how-to manual for parents to have questions with their young and teenage children. Layla, I have one more question for you, but we're going to have to take a quick break, so I would encourage everybody to stick with us through the break. We'll wrap up our conversation about your fantastic book on the other side. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 and 92.5.
Gift your friends and family with a Christmas trip. If you act quickly, you can purchase tickets for Catholic Spirit Radio's Christmas pilgrimage to the National Shrine of Our Lady of the Snows in Belleville, Illinois. The charter bus leaves in the late morning on Saturday, December 1st, and returns the same evening. There are pickups in Bloomington, Peoria, and Goodfield. The shrine grounds will be beautifully decorated with the Nativity as the centerpiece of the drive-through light display. There's a church tour, Christmas tree exhibit, and a gift shop, too. Don't wait. purchase tickets today for this very special Christmas event. For more details and to register, go to CatholicSpiritRadio.com or call Kathy at 309-828-6554.
This is Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. If you're listening in Bloomington and we're a little staticky, you might check us out on 92.5. It might be a little bit clearer. We have Layla Miller with us, a fantastic author, a mother of eight, who has co-authored the book Made This Way, which is, again, I describe it as a how-to manual in dealing with your children as a parent, how to explain to them different topics that they're going to face these days, everything from, you know, premarital sex to transgenderism and everything in between. Again, Layla, thank you so much for being with us.
So glad to be here. Thank you for having me, Jason.
Absolutely. We were having a conversation during the break. I told you before the break that I had one more question for you, and we'll get to it. But we were having a conversation, and it triggered a thought in my mind, which I think is, as a parent, is probably one of the most difficult things to handle. And I know you touch on it in the book, so I'm going to ask you about it. When our Catholic faith and the explanations that we give to our children don't match up with family members. I know specifically I've had conversations with my kids about marriage. I came from parents who were divorced. My dad's been remarried a couple times now. My mom is remarried again. And so maybe give us a little bit of your thoughts on how do we speak the truth without having to necessarily throw grandma or grandpa under the bus.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, it's that fine balance of teaching our children, again, through our actions. I mean, we always love our family members. So clearly, you know, hopefully we've taught our children to love their grandparents, or they just do naturally because they see them and they interact with them. But
they
might
see
that
stuff.
They're living. Yeah, that's the great part. Sometimes. Sometimes you're like, oh, could you stop sending all those toys?
Oh, my goodness.
But, yeah. but they can see, oh, gosh, but grandma and grandpa, how come daddy's mom is not married to daddy's dad anymore? Why don't they live together? You know, so you have these situations where you're like, oh boy, I don't want them to not love their grandparents, but at the same time, we can't say that this is totally fine and no problem here. It's that line where you say, honey, you know, we love grandma and grandpa so much, and we pray for them all the time. Sometimes people think, you know, that it would make them happier if they didn't live together in the same house anymore. And we know that's not what God wants for them, and we know that's not the way that God set things up with marriage and so that kids can have their mommy and their daddy in their home until they grow up. But that's sometimes what people do because they may not know God's law. They may not know what he wants them to do. And so we pray for them, and we pray that they will understand God's law. But we know that that's the way that God wants us to live, and that's why mommy and daddy will never, ever get divorced, or, you know, we'll always be living in the same house together. So, I mean, things like that where you're very gentle about it, but you let them know they're free to love their grandparents, of course, and yet we can separate actions from people. And that's the thing I think the culture has a really hard time doing, but we have to teach our kids to do that, is we can love a person, but we can still say that particular action isn't something that God wants for those people because it's not for their ultimate happiness.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and to that point, and I've made this comparison, you know, in conversations with folks before, and I completely, to some extent, understand, you know, and almost probably to some extent agree with the complaint. You know, a lot of times you'll have gay couples that say, well, the church doesn't, you know, support me or whatever. And at the end of the day, the sin is fairly similar to that of, and you talk about it in the book, you know, like premarital sex or sex outside of marriage, even adultery. And so I think that where we start to cause ourselves problems is that we a lot of times as a church, we've picked and choose, well, this isn't as bad as that. So, you know, we're going to maybe give these folks somewhat of a pass. We haven't stood as strongly against, you know, teenagers having sex outside of marriage as we should. So then on the flip side, we have other people, like I said, the gay couple that's like, well, wait a second, why are we ostracized by the church when you guys are letting, you know, teenage kids run around at, you know, the Catholic high school and have sex with each other or whatever. And I'm not saying that happens here. I'm just saying, you know, I understand where we don't have the luxury. And I think what's caused us a lot of problems is that we've taken it. We don't have the luxury of picking and choosing what sins we condone and what sins, you know, we allow. And when society as a whole has every right to call us out on it when we try to do that and say, well, this one's not as bad as that one or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. And so I remember when the whole gay marriage thing was a big thing, the line at the time was, well, you know, heterosexuals have already ruined marriage with divorce. And I remember giving lip service to that and saying, yeah, but well, we're against divorce, yeah. And then as I went into writing the second book about divorce, I realized, I've been teaching the faith for 20-some years by that point, and I never, even though all the things I talked about, human sexuality and marriage, and I never touched really the subject of divorce, which is a terrible sin. It is a scourge. It is something that Christ forbade. It is, you know, if you read the Catechism, there's just so much on it about how it's a plague and it's a grave offense against the natural law, and it brings destruction and all this stuff, and I'm like, nobody talks about that. Well, so we talked about that, you know, in the book, because it's all connected. And yes, we do risk being complete hypocrites, you know, divorcing at the same rate as everybody else in the culture, contracepting at the same rate, you know, wink and nod to a certain pornography. Well, you know, there's a lot of it out there. Yeah, some Christians will say that, you know, masturbation is healthy. And so all of these things, we have to go back to the premise, which is that what is human sexuality? What's it for? You know, what is marriage? Define marriage. That's the funny thing. You talk to anyone out there that is for gay marriage or anything else, and I've never in all my years had anyone be able to define marriage, the term that we're all fighting over. You know, what is it that everybody gets to have and everybody wants a right to? We haven't even defined it. They can't define it because they don't know what it is. And so, you know, they'll say, like, it's a contract between people who make a commitment to each other. I said, oh, great, that's like me and my gardener. I mean, right. it could apply to any. These definitions are so broad that they could apply to anyone. So, so we got it. You know, we have to get back to what is this thing we're talking about, and what is its nature, and then we can know how to use it and how to, you know, to live. So, yeah, it's so primal. You know, get back to the basics of how we were made, and that will make sense to kids when we lay that all out for them. But yeah, you're absolutely right on that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I said I had one more question for you, and we're already 7 or 8 minutes into this segment. So obviously I got sidetracked, but I'll say that as my day job here in Bloomington is that of an independent insurance advisor, and so I go see a lot of clients, and a lot of them are older couples, especially that have that I have these conversations with, and that is, you know, hey, we went to Mass every Sunday. We had 3 or 4 kids. Now we have, you know, 8 or 10 grandkids. None of them are going to church. None of them are Catholic. You said you're already 5 for 5. So, I mean, I'd say you're definitely the expert to ask. And as a parent, you know, my number one priority for my kids is how do I get them to heaven? And so what would you say was maybe lacking as we've seen droves of young Catholics and middle-aged Catholics that have left the church, right? They say that the largest population of Catholics is that of former Catholics. What would you say that maybe like your parents' age group, what did they miss out on that the young parents need to really focus on in order to make sure that we're keeping our youth in the faith?
Yes, because I spent many years away from the church, so I was one of those who, just went off the rails morally. And so I think what happened in those days and is still happening today is there is no understanding or cohesive understanding of what I call the tapestry of truth, that if you present something in its fullness, and if you yourself are really passionate, striving to be personally holy and personally knowing Jesus Christ and personally having a prayer life, all of these things, you know, so you have to have the truth and you have to have the goodness and you have to have the beauty, you know, you want all of it. Kids know instinctively if you aren't taking your faith seriously. And there are many parents who are, you know, maybe cutting corners. They may have sterilized themselves. You know, they may have used contraception, and the kids know that, you know, if they say, because a lot of times the parents are very open about it. You know, yeah, well, then dad has vasectomy or whatever. That's why we don't have any more kids. Or if you skip mass every a couple times a month, maybe you can't quite get there because there's a sporting event or all these different things. These things kids will understand then, okay, so faith isn't quite that serious about it. It's not that big a deal. It's not that important. And then the lure of the world comes. And then it's easy to be tempted out when something isn't important. You know, it's not the priority. So that's one huge thing. The other thing, again, and with my kids, yes, five for five, so far nobody has even shown any signs of saying, this is a bunch of garbage, I don't believe any of this. Now, everybody has free will. I am in no way presuming that none of my children will ever go off the rails or leave the faith. That is a possibility with every single human being, because we have free will to reject the truth and reject Christ or not. But one thing that I've never had an issue with is that things have always, again, made sense to them. I didn't know it was called natural law teaching. I didn't know that term until I was in my 40s. And yet everyone used to know it. I have a quote in there from Martin Luther King. He's sitting in Birmingham jail, you know, in the 1963, I think it was, or 64, I can't remember. But he references natural law as a way to determine whether or not a law is just or not in the society. And he quotes Aquinas, he quotes Augustine. We used to be educated as to natural law teaching, and that's how we would determine morality. That's how we would know if something was good or bad. So I always taught through logic and reason because things have to make sense to me. It always made sense to my kids, too. I think that most people are missing that because they do tend to go with feelings like, well, you know, I don't want you to feel a negative emotion, dear child. You know, I don't want you to be ostracized. I don't want to be ostracized. We have to know our faith. We have to know it well. If our kids have gone off the rails, like you said, there's lots of people in nursing homes and elder, you know, even just older people in middle age who are mourning the fact that their children are not Catholic anymore and their grandkids aren't being baptized. Pray. I'm telling you, and I said this in my first book about raising chaste Catholic men, James 5:16 says, the prayer of the righteous avails much. Guess what? Saints' prayers, those who reach union on earth, those who are holy, holier than us, you know, on earth right now, because they have this great interior life where they've cultivated their relationship with Christ through the Eucharist, through adoration, through Mass, through prayer, their prayers are actually more powerful than yours and mine. And so I always say, if you want to bring your child back, be that Saint Monica, be the person who becomes so holy on earth that your prayers merit so much grace that overflows so many places that your children are going to come back one day because of your prayers. So there's always a remedy. You know, it's just are we able to do this? Hard work, the hard work of holiness and picking up that cross, and it's never too late. So
absolutely,
that's what I would say.
Well, Layla, we so appreciate you being with us. I loved the book. I would recommend it to everybody listening. And so, again, thank you so much for coming on the program with us. We have been having a great conversation with Layla Miller, who is the co-author of Made This Way. If you have 5 minutes, we always like to wrap up our hour with the gospel reading from this coming Sunday, and I would love to just throw you on the hot seat and ask for a reflection. Would that work?
Oh, sure, absolutely.
All right. Well, see, we like to throw you on the hot seat because we want,
okay,
you know, it doesn't have to be deep theological, just whatever speaks to you.
No, I'd love that. That's amazing. I'd love to do that.
Awesome. Well, this Sunday's reading is from Mark chapter 13, 24 through 32. Jesus said to his disciples, "In those days after that tribulation, the sun will be darkened, and the moon will not give its light, and the stars will be falling from the sky, and the powers in the heavens will be shaken. And then they will see the Son of Man coming in the clouds with great power and glory. And then he will send out the angels and gather his elect from the four winds, from the end of the earth to the end of the sky. Learn a lesson from the fig tree. When its branch becomes tender and sprouts leaves, you know that summer is near. In the same way, when you see these things happening, know that he is near, at the gates. Amen, I say to you, this generation will not pass away until all these things have taken place. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. But of that day or hour no one knows, neither the angels in heaven nor the Son, but only the Father. The Gospel according to Mark. All right, Layla, so you're on the hot seat.
What? That is beautiful. So the things that came to mind are, no matter how many trials and tribulations are coming to Catholics, and they are, I mean, we all feel it. I think we all feel it down to our bones that these are treacherous times. There is someone in control, and there is the redemption at the end of all this. But we have to undergo the trial. I mean, there's no way around it. You cannot escape the cross. But the beauty of it is, and this is so beautiful, when I'm going to name drop here, but when Cardinal Farah sent me an email endorsing the Primal Loss book that I wrote, he put a Latin quote that I just love, and I don't know the Latin because I don't speak Latin, although my children do. It's amazing. Well, some of them do. But the cross, the world turns, but the cross is fixed. And I thought that came to mind because, again, you know, Christ is always the same. The cross is fixed, and the world's going to turn and turn, and these terrible things are happening, and we don't even have our orientation. Sometimes we're so disoriented and confused, and it's so chaotic morally, but the cross is fixed. So we keep our eyes on the cross. We keep our eyes on what Christ did for us and on him, and he's the king of the world, and he'll bring us through this tribulation, and we just have to, you know, keep our eyes fixed on Christ. And to me, that gives great hope. And, you know, you feel the joy in your heart just thinking about that.
Absolutely. Amen to that. Well, we so appreciate you, again, coming on with us today. You've been listening to Layla Miller, the co-author of Made This Way. Layla, if folks have been listening and want to get more information about you or about the book, what are some of the places they can get that information?
Sure. So the book can be gotten at shop.catholic.com, including you can get them as cheap as $5 a book if you buy a case of 20, and so it's good for like book clubs and moms groups and stuff. But I'm also at, I have a pretty big presence on Facebook. It's Layla Miller, Catholic author and writer, and also LaylaMiller.net, so it's LaylaMiller.net, and then my old blog, Little Catholic Bubble, you can just Google that, and there's a lot of archives there. And you can reach me either through any of those mediums, and I'll always happy to be in touch with anyone. So,
awesome. Well, again, we so appreciate the hard work that you do for our Catholic faith, and we so appreciate you coming on with us today. You've been listening to Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley, and Layla Miller has been with us on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
You've been listening to Catholic Conversations with Jason Bramley on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 and 92.5. Brought to you by the generous support of Meyer Bramley Insurance, serving Illinois, Missouri, and Kansas. Meyer Bramley Insurance can be reached online at mbi.agency or via phone at 844-890-2626. Catholic Conversations, where we talk about faith, family, and finance. Download our podcasts at CatholicSpiritRadio.com.